featured for a half hour. Simple, just send me an email, and that is mcgrathd@gtc.edu. We'll talk and we will get you.
24/7 Jazz is available over the air and on your smartphone. On your HD radio, tune to 91.1 HD2 or download the WGTD phone app.
He's at least cracking up is what you heard today. They also have another great CD called Fish Out of Water. Very simple. Also, their performance dates are on the...
That's the WGTD Radio Theater, this coming Saturday morning at 11:15.
This is WGTD-HD. You're listening to Education Matters in southeastern Wisconsin, devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW-Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Good morning. I'm Steve Brown, your host today for Education Matters. On today's program, two segments. My first guest is Wisconsin State Superintendent Dr. Jill Underley. And in segment, Underley, welcome.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. I'm really happy to be here.
You were elected back in 2021, and I could read a short bio, which I won't do. And maybe if you could just give our listeners kind of a quick overview of your background and what led you to decide to run for state superintendent.
Yeah, of course. So we're coming up on 2 years now. It'll be April of 21, like you said, and then here we are in 23. So 2 years in, so halfway through, I have a background as a social studies teacher and at the high school level mostly. And then I was an elementary principal. I was a high school principal. I worked at the Department of Public Instruction once before under, Governor Evers when he was state superintendent. I also have experience working in higher education at the UW-Madison in student affairs, and then there's plus the fact that I'm the parent of two children in Wisconsin public schools that led me to run for this role. I saw a need, you know, as far as making sure that we had that through line, just making...
On
the community, depending on the zip code. And what's really unfortunate is we saw that before the pandemic, so, you know, I'm going to just say pre-2020, and then we also see fewer teachers staying in teaching. We know that mental health is off the charts, you know, in as far as...
But if you were attending a school board meeting and just listening, what kinds of areas would you talk to a school board member who is making all those local decisions? And you know, everyone likes to say that, yes, everything is political. Having a legislature on both sides that are controlled by the Republicans. I mean, this is no secret to anyone. But maybe if you could talk about the budget ask and maybe highlight two or three important...
...their public schools. But we need to make sure that every school district has those opportunities. So we want to raise revenue limits. We want to improve and increase per pupil funding. We also know listening to families and when kids are... when they have full bellies and they are ready to learn. So that was really, we wanted to make sure that the state was providing what they are constitutionally mandated to do, and that is to provide that funding to our school districts so that they could provide these services.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned special ed. One of my previous positions as a public school administrator was director of special programs that included special ed. As a school board member, I can't agree with you more that the funding needs to be increased, especially as students either with IEPs or 504s, and those are two separate areas that needs to be funded.
away from programming and other areas. And, you know, so it's really, that would be ideal. But what we did in our plan, and what the governor has endorsed and actually made better on, is looking at the fact that we only reimburse around 30% right now. You know, this way, the plan was to gradually increase that. Ultimately, we'd love to get to 100%, but it was gradual. But we do have the means. It's really, it's just about priorities, because, you know, if we were to increase special education funding, it helps students with disabilities and it helps students without disabilities. So it helps every student. And again, it's, you know, free access to public education is the law. In particular, he was my high school music teacher, high school choir, and being a very shy kid who didn't like to...
7 years. But, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, I think everyone, and I always like to ask that question, because everyone always has one teacher or more who have that sort of impact.
Thank you so much. So glad to be here.
You know, we're coming up on the 40th anniversary of you being suspended from school. You were suspended on April 26th of 1983 from Bethel High School in Pierce County, Washington. My first question is, does it seem like it has been 40 years?
You know, yes and no. I still remember it vividly, but yeah, a lot of time has passed. A lot of, you know.
Sure.
But whether you look at national events or in your own personal life, it's a lot of time.
Sure. And we'll talk about the case and talk about exactly what happened. And I know you've been a guest before on Education Matters. We'll be talking about some different things. We'll be talking about your organization that you've been doing for 30 years with your summer camps at what occurred at Bethel High School. And that was, I always forget, is that due north of Seattle?
And about half an hour north of Olympia.
Okay.
There's that whole little...
Yeah, the cheerleader case, Mahonoy versus BL, Brandy Levy, which was decided years ago. But talk first about what happened, in your own words, what led up to you getting suspended.
Well, I had a friend on the little speech and debate team at the school that I was on who was running for office. The school had decided that my debate partner, whose name was Matt Taylor, they just felt that it wasn't appropriate for, you know, an hour before the assembly, 45 minutes even maybe, asking me if I could write him a speech and, you know, be his campaign manager. So I was the hardworking advocate, you know.
Sure.
So I wrote this speech in about 5 minutes. He was in the room. I went around and showed it to a few teachers. The reaction ranged from "my was hilarious and I should do it" to a history teacher that I loved named Stephen DeHart, saying "that'll raise some eyebrows and you really know how to yank their chain, Matt Fraser," and journalism teacher who laughed but then said, "I don't know if I think that's appropriate." And that was sort of the biggest admonishment that I was 17. I felt it was highly appropriate. Kids the prior year had, you know, done little stunts and, you know, we were high school kids, you know, there was innuendo in lots of things. It's not like I'm the only kid who ever used innuendo in school. Was this okay or not? So I went to the assembly. I introduced this other kid, Jeff Coleman. I gave my brief speech, which has a few sentences. It's total, I think, 6 sentences. You know, it ends with, like, "please vote for Jeff Coleman."
The speech exactly as you said it. In fact, on Education Matters a couple years ago. Could you recite
memory? Let's see if I have it in. "He'll take any issue and nail it to the wall. He doesn't attack things in spurts. He drives hard, pushing and pushing, until finally he succeeds. Jeff will go to the very end, even the climax, for each and every one of us. So please vote for Jeff Coleman, because he'll never come." I'm a little bit when I deliver it, but, you know, not overly dramatically. The innuendo was there. They asked me at this very short federal trial, the first step of the legal battle. You know, they got me on the stand, and they asked me,
"Did no your metaphors, your double entendre, prompting some action by the school?" After you gave the speech, what exactly happened? I mean, relive the next 5 seconds
in my recollection after the bell had rung, because it was the end of the day. So everybody got out. We were in the hallway just, you know, getting ready to get out. They're not very reliable backers. So I ditched the speech to know that once you start lying, they can just, you know, get you on that issue as school administrators. And that was something that the ACLU attorneys that I met with later that afternoon stressed from the start. Mm-hmm. So they ended the meeting after 5 minutes and said, "Okay, go home, write down word for word what you think you said, for, you know, what kind of help do you need or would you like to get?" And then they, you know, call you back. So it was 4 p.m. I told them, you know, I really don't know what legal ground I stand on. Like, you know, did I have a free speech right to give this speech? And so she was very curious about that. What, you know, did the assembly stop? Was there like violence at the school that I know of? Did anybody run down the hall, you know, breaking windows or anything? And as far as I knew, nothing like that had happened. I described the reaction and she was like, "Well, we think that it's definitely legal. It's a student government assembly where you should have the most possible free speech rights. And so we think that you were entitled to give it."
You mentioned the Tinker case. Had you heard about, did you know about the Tinker case that was decided about 14 years before that, as you stated?
Honestly, became educated about free speech issues as a result of my own case.
Okay.
You know, I knew about the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never even really thought about the question of, you know, does that apply to kids? I kind of presumed that it did. By even lawyers, law professors, I've been to classes at top 10 law schools with law professors who believed that the court case, and they said that when it comes to juvenile obscenity, which is what they classified my speech as, they said it was, you know, bordering on lewd or obscene, mm-hmm. and it was some form of juvenile obscenity, which they said has a lesser standard than for adults, and we want to defer to the court. It wasn't even during school time,
right.
And nothing major happened the next day, and they just said that if it's going to promote drugs at school, gets into school, you know, social media speech, mm-hmm. Outside of school, and that's sort of its own issue, which I was surprised at that decision, to be honest.
Yeah, and that was a 7-2 decision of a little more than 2 years ago, and we've talked about this on Education Matters. She held up her middle finger. She used the F word in a Snapchat on screen on a phone. Someone took a picture of the phone with her doing that, and she got suspended. This is a lead in to the things you've been doing over the last 30 years with your organization, Education in Favor of the School District. And as you said, they really didn't say this, but they meant that. How do you teach that in a debate class and your camps that you run with Education Unlimited?
The most dead-on example is that we do a mock trial program. And the most common case that we use, we mix it up if we have returning students. So, but about half of the time, we use a case that I helped them write, where, you know, you have two sides of the story, the school side and the student side, and we have a student hold up a sign in our mock trial that says something like, "Legalize pot to fund schools now." Mm-hmm. So it's basically, is that a pro-drug message? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you legalize pot to fund schools now, it seems more policy-oriented, but it also attempts to get the students to understand the fine lines and sometimes absurdity of some of these Supreme Court rulings. Like, you know, how could it be okay to say legalize pot to fund schools now on a sign? And it's not okay to say bong hits for Jesus, mm-hmm. which, as Joe Frederick says, is sort of, he's like, I hits for Jesus really is promoting drugs in schools. In teaching these things to people, you're doing your best to try to get them to analyze the facts of the case, the sentiment of where the court is. The court has really introduced themselves into a lot of these long lines of issues. And we've seen that play out with the really abrupt reversal of Roe versus Wade. Sure. That it's like, to some extent, I've told people, it kind of depends on the whim of the judges. I will tell you this, many schools that I've consulted with on this over the years, informally or formally, have sort of concluded, most of them conclude, we're just going to do what we want. And if the court, they said 99 times out of 100, this is how one administrator explained it. They were like, very few students are going to sue us over this, and we can't run around in fear of lawsuits. So we try to be aware of things like these few court cases. We try to do what's right and what our community wants us to do and what we think we need to do to run the schools. And if it goes to court once in a while and a judge has to decide, that's okay. On the other end of the spectrum, I won't name them, but I know one school district. It cannot be understated that this was a student government assembly of 1 hour specifically set aside for students to make speeches. They had every power to review the speeches in advance, but chose not to. So there are far less restrictive means than letting them punish me after the fact if a school wants to exert some control. Mm-hmm. And so I felt my case was, to circle back to that for a second, was one where it's really a pronounced case where I think the court, you try to teach people the nuance, you try to teach them to approach it rationally, but these are issues that school district officials struggle with, and they also sort of have to make a decision. How much are they going to live in fear of lawsuits? How much is important to cater to their own community? And how important is it to sort of just make a statement to the students that the precedent is that they are going to fight for the right to control the schools? I think those are things for a school administrator to kind of bear in mind.
As we close this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD Public Radio, if you could talk briefly about education, where you do the...
Absolutely, would love to. So Education Unlimited does summer enrichment programs for kids and teens, basically grades 4 through 12. For this coming summer, you know, we're still reopening from COVID. For two summers, most college campuses or all of them, we were her final partner on doing those camps, but then she passed away.
What about here in the Midwest? You know, so many outstanding universities in the Midwest. You know, it's not just flyover country, but any thoughts about doing that in the future?
We would love to do that. You know, the programs at places like Georgetown are overnight.
Minnesota. In summary, 30 seconds, give us an idea of what you're looking at for the future.
Well, one thing I'm exploring is opening a nonprofit this year. We've actually begun to take steps to do that. And the nonprofit, which we'll just call the Foundation, you can just click on the one of the, you know, there's online chat, there's phone numbers.